You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Welcome to Ironcast, one of the stars of the 80s. 165 league games for the Hammers from 85 to 1990. It's Mark Ward. Welcome to Ironcast, Wardy.
Thanks, Chris. James?
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 It's good to have you on. That 80s West Ham team was just full of characters, yeah. And I can't wait to get into it. But it's interesting your kind of trajectory as a footballer, because you started at Everton, but you were basically rejected and they told you were too small. And you dropped into non-league and you got a job at a bakery. I don't know how many West Ham fans would know that. Yeah, what were you in charge of in the bakery?
I was, they just made the job for me because obviously I went to Northwich when Everton let me go at 18. They said I was never be big enough, strong enough or quick enough to play at the top level. I'm still not big enough. But I did work at my strength, and then I got a lot quicker in them 2 years that I was at Northwich. But Robert Baker used to sponsor the club, so I was always threatening to leave unless they got me a job, and they got me a job counting the trays because they were all going missing throughout the year. So I used to have to just count all the trays that were going on all the lorries with all the bread, and then sit in the canteen eating donuts.
Brilliant. Did you, when you got released from Everton, mate, did it affect you? Was it a big knock?
Yeah, it was. Because I knew I had the ability. It was just my physique. You know what I mean? I was only like 9 stone. So, you know, the previous season, I just won, played at a tournament in Groningen, and it was an under-19 tournament. So I scored the winner. So they had to sign me as a pro because there was some special players in that tournament. Koeman played. Some of the big Italian players. There was the two English teams at Everton and Ipswich, and we won it, scored the winner. So they had to, I think if I hadn't done what I did in that tournament, they wouldn't have signed me because they were against having like small players, really. That was the way it was in them days.
How much did it fight, getting told you're not going to be tall enough, you're quick enough, whatever, how much did that kind of spur you on and fire you up to prove everybody wrong?
Well, it was, you know, obviously I went back to Everton years later, but I just knew myself that I had to, you know, give it a go, and I needed a platform. And the only club that came in for me was Northwich. When I got the telegram to the house, I read it quickly, and I was just desperate to stay in the league. I said, Dad, I've got a trial with Norwich. I didn't look properly. And he went, it's Northwich. I said, where's that? He said, it's only half an hour away. But it was a great learning curve for me. And I've always said this, the 2 years at non-league level made me a player. You know, I think if I'd have stayed at Everton in the reserves, because the next youngest was 28, and there was joiners, brickies, insurance, you know, guys, teachers, all good players. And I played at Wembley the first season in the FA Trophy. So, and the lads all looked after me, and I really improved.
That Northwich Victoria, you mentioned it there, you got to the FA Trophy final in 1983, but you got taken out early doors. Yeah. And I imagined a pacey, tricky winger like yourself in non-league, you're a marked man, surely. You're getting taken down all the time. Would that be the case?
I always remember that game because I was crying with frustration because he'd done me proper, you know what I mean? It didn't go off, but my leg was gone.
But classic kind of halfway punch.
It was one of them. He's the danger. Take him out. You know what I mean? He'd be sent off now, but in them days, it was like...
I can imagine him being a player that probably played similar to myself, was it? a bit of a thug.
Yeah, I mean, took me right out, and I remember I was that disappointed. I never went up for my medal, and I got in a lot of trouble for that. I just stormed off the pitch, but I got into the England non-league side and played a couple of games for them. So, but Northwich was a great experience for me.
I'm just going to go back to what Chris said there. Do you think that, like you said, that did you get more physical playing in the lower leagues? Did you toughen up a little bit? And you know,
like the next youngest was 28, and I was only 18. And my two centre halves was Jeff Forshaw, he was the joiner, and Kenny Jones. He'd been there 15 years. Kenny's arms was just like he was just a stocky. Jeff, they were a partnership on the pitch. They worked together, they drunk together, they done everything together, and it was like you could see. They read each other so much, and that was the backbone of the team. That them two, they were, and no one messed around with them. You know, I remember getting bullied in a lot of the games, especially against Barnett. We played Barnett. I was a midfield player, and he was bullying me really. And Jonesy went, "I'll see you afterwards in the bar," and he started swearing at him, saying, "You scouts this and scouts that." So when I was in the bar, the other teams come in, you get the sandwiches out, and Kenny walks straight up to me, said, "Come on, me and you outside now." Yeah. He went, "Oh, don't be like that." He went, "No, come on, let's do it now. Let's sort it out." And he wouldn't go outside. He was too afraid, really. But these are the things that happened in non-league football.
The good old days.
Yeah. You mentioned, I think your temperament is something I find really interesting because you are a tricky winger. And tricky wingers, pacey tricky wingers, are not usually known as hotheads. But you're like, your temperament, they're like walking off, not getting a medal. Stuart Pearce called you the hardest player he ever came up against. And I think a lot of defenders would have said that in their time, that you were a hard man, essentially. Where did that come from? Did you always have that?
I'm one of seven. And we've had to fight for everything, you know, as brothers and sisters and that. So I think it was just the way I was brought up, and to show no fear, really, because... You know, someone's bigger than you. Like James will tell you, he's a big lad and he was hard as nails. But when you come up against Stuart Pearce, like in them days, every left back that more or less I played against was a psycho. So you had Van der Nau, psycho, Mark Dennis, psycho, Stuart Pearce, psycho. I ended up playing against Julian. He marked me in the Merseyside derby. He was a psycho. So yeah, you'd have to be a bit of a psycho to take him on, because... You know, they were tough lads, especially Piercy. You know what I mean? But he used to pull his shorts up and show his thighs.
Would that make you nervous playing it, or would it make you nervous playing against someone like that? Or would it raise your game a little bit?
Just the opposite. Yeah,
I bet. I can see it in your eyes.
The first time I played against Stuart, he went over the top, and the tongue of my boot, he pierced that. So at half time, he stitched me up. And my thing was, well, I've got to get him back. So I was just waiting. And, you know, just waiting on his touch. And what he's doing, the ball's come in and he's just mistimed it. And I've gone off my feet and I've hit him that hard in the second half. I've hit him that hard. I thought, oh, it made me shake. I thought it hurt me. And he got up and looked at me and he must have thought, where's this fella come from? He shouldn't even be here. And then I'd crossed two balls with Cotty and he absolutely destroyed him. I think it was, I don't know, it's just I think the way I was brought up in a way that, you know, just to fight for everything, really.
Have you heard that about Stuart Pearce, that he said you were the hardest?
Yeah, I hosted an event in Ipswich Theatre a few weeks ago, and just me and him, and it was interesting.
Oh, so he's mates now?
Yeah, he said to me, "Ward, are you my nemesis?" I said, "Don't be using big words, mate." He said, "I could never get the better of you," but, you know, that's a bit of honesty and it's a good accolade for me, really.
Because, yeah, it's a compliment. Yeah. Obviously, how many times you played for England?
Oh, four.
A lot. To come from somewhere like that, do you know what I mean? He was doing something right, mate.
Yeah. But, you know, so Stuart was very intimidating. You know, just to look at him, he's an intimidating man, but couldn't intimidate me.
You made your way to Oldham and then eventually in the summer of 1985, a huge fee at the time of £250,000, John Lyle signs you for West Ham. And did you need much convincing? And was John Lyle instrumental in convincing you?
Chris, I didn't even have it. I had the two seasons, then missed a game for Oldham. And when Joe Royal, the great Everton centre forward, great manager as well, he said, "If you play one game, son, said, £9,500 we're spending on a non-league player. And I said to him, I'll be your best player. And he just laughed. He said, if you make one appearance this season. And so on the Tuesday, I signed. And I said to my dad after the first training session, Dad, no one can get near me. I'm the best player. He went, Mark, you've only been there 2 seconds. I said, so we played behind closed doors, done really well in the game. And then on the Thursday, I said to my dad again, if he doesn't play me tomorrow, he's missing the boat here. So after training on the Friday, he come up to me and he went, so big Joe. And he, so I'm looking up at him, he goes, got some good news for you, son. I said, what's that, Gaffer? He said, you're making your league debut tomorrow against Brighton. I said, I should think so as well. And he just tapped me on the head. And I scored the winner in the last minute, a diving header at the far post. And I always remember the first 4 games, one man of the match, and he was a lovely man, Joe, but you know, really good, cared for his players. And he just grabbed hold of me, he said, it's the best £9,500 I'll ever spend. Brilliant. And he, you know, he sold me for $250,000 2 years later. So it was a good investment, wasn't it?
Yeah, yeah. So yeah, how did John Lyle convince you to come to West Ham?
Well, he didn't, because the way things were done in them days, no agents. So I was looking to start the 85 season at Oldham. That was my third season. And I get a phone call off Joe. He said, you sat down, son? I went, no, Gaffer, why? He goes, got some news for you. He said, you know, clubs have been after you. He said, you're going to, we just agreed a fee of $250,000 for West Ham. You'll be a West Ham player in the next couple of days. And you're going to make your debut for West Ham on Saturday. I just couldn't believe it. And he said, and John Lyle would be at your house within the hour to pick it up to take you to London.
Wow.
And that was, I didn't have any time.
And was Joe sort of happy for you to go though? Like,
yeah, because I think it was good money, you know what I mean? So, and he always said to me, there were clubs interested, he said, but West Ham would be, a great club for you.
Brilliant.
Because it's, you know, the way I played. And he said, you'll fit in great there. And he had a lot of respect for John. So when John knocked on the door, with Eddie Bailey, chief scout, done, just bought this out, little two-up, two-down terrace thing in Liverpool. And he goes, straight away, you know, first impressions on people that you meet in football. This man just took, because my ex-wife then, Jane, just had a little baby, Melissa, and she was crying her eyes out because it happened so quickly. So she was still crying when John knocked on the door. And straight away he said, put the kettle on, son. I'll deal with this. Sat down next to her, explained everything that was going to happen. She stopped crying, made them the tea. He said, I always remember him, he said, I've just given a kid £1 in the street to mind my car. and a big jag, didn't he? So, and then before we knew it, we're in the car going to, you know, to, I think we stayed in Epping.
So he's taking the missus down, he's take your missus down?
Yeah.
But you had that phone call, Joe, was it? And
that was it.
And he just off.
Yeah, we just
Melissa. Were you chatting the whole ride down?
Yeah, it was all about the games that Eddie Bailey had seen me playing. Even the pre-season games, he'd watch me. He said, because we like to see that. We want to see if you're still having a go in the pre-season games, he said. And he said, you were just as, you know, effective, and he took it serious. So they'd done the due diligence, and it was just a matter of, you know, me getting a good start, really.
That's brilliant.
How did you find the bright lights of London?
Well, I always remember the first day training in the gym, and I never got a kick. And it's the first time in my life that I was like thinking, am I going to be good enough? Because James will tell you, I had two centre-halves there, Gailey and Alvin. And like, Gailey was the ball player, but Alvin was a good player as well. And their ability on the ball from the other teams that I've played for, like, there's no disrespect to the lads at Oldham, but they were proper defenders. And they, you know, it was like clear the ball and defend first, but these two were getting the ball and was just
like a midfielder.
Yeah, like midfield players. And so I looked at them two and I thought, I'm going to have to improve dramatically very, very quickly. And John played me against Birmingham for my debut. It's not that I didn't have a good game, but the whole team didn't play well. And I thought he wouldn't play me on the Tuesday night game. And he just pulled me to one side. He said, listen, we're 100% about you. And he just like, you didn't have a good game, but no one else did. This is your stadium now. I've never played at Upton Park before. And Alvin got hold of me and said, listen, see that over there, that's the chicken run. He said, I'm giving you some advice. He said, they will either make you or break you. He said, they won't suffer fools. He said, they'll know, especially if you're that close to them, whether you're going in for a tackle or you're pulling out. I don't think Alvin knew about my game, at, you know what I mean? That's what I was all about, really. But yeah, what a fantastic... I played really well on the Tuesday and I played in every game that season. So
42 league appearances, yeah, right? Yeah, in a season, like... It's a small squad, famously, that 85-86 season. But how did you do it? Your body must have been broken by the end of the season.
Well, I've spoke about this before. And like, I had two full seasons at Oldham. So I hadn't missed a game for 3 years. You know what I mean? So, but as a winger, you do get calls and you do, but you know, centre halves as well. You're never 100%, are you?
No.
You never, even from the first game of the season, you're always carrying something, a little strain or a bruise or something like that. But to me, people say about, was you tired? When you're winning games, yeah. I don't think tiredness comes into it. And we were going for the big prize and we just ran out of games at the end of the season. And it was just an incredible season. I don't think anyone realised what was going to happen until after Christmas. And then I think we beat Chelsea 4-0 away and it was a breathtaking performance, best away performance I've ever been involved in. Dev scored one from 30 yards, which was I've never seen him shoot like that
such
before.
A good goal.
Gailey said it's an assist. He got fouled. He got fouled on the halfway line. There was no grass on the pitch. We had that white Avco.
The cars behind the goal.
Yeah. So Gailey just got the ball and just tapped it to Dev. And Dev just went on amazing, didn't he? And as he did, and lashed one in from 30 yards. But it was just a fantastic all round team performance, really.
Is this the season that keeps you up at night? Like when you go to bed and you close your eyes, is this the one that haunts you a little bit?
Yeah, it does. And I think all the lads are the same. You know, it's the highest the club have ever finished. And there's been some great teams after us. And you'd always think, maybe if I'd have done that a little bit differently, if I hadn't have done this and that. And you know, because it's like at that level, Liverpool were a fantastic side at that time. And Everton were powerful as well. So to push them to the last game of the season, they beat Chelsea. And if they hadn't beat Chelsea, it would have been West Ham, Everton, my two clubs on the Monday. But I think that game would have been different. Everton did beat us when we finished third. But we were playing like Saturday, Monday, Thursday. We didn't play for 6 weeks because of the bad weather. So we had six weeks without playing a game. So just, you know, ticking over. And then all the games come thick and fast. I'd rather play than train with you. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
God, imagine that now.
I know.
Imagine like having six and then having to happen, we managers, current managers, moaning about how many games there are. Imagine that. Like 6 weeks off and then trying to get the games in before the end of the season. Yeah. I mean.
But we played, I think it was the season Ipswich, we played them. I think that was four times because we kept on drawing in the cup. It was a nightmare. You know what I mean? And then when we beat them, we eventually beat them and it was snow. With the orange ball in them days, you know what I mean? So, and it was, we should never have played the game. It was like, what? It was like rock hard, the ice.
Yeah. No one saw Heaton in those days, of course.
No.
But Everton were in the title race with us. Was there a part of you at the time that really wanted to finish above Everton, given what you'd been through as a kid? Or
I wasn't like, I knew at the time at 18, I wasn't good enough. And they didn't give me, it was Gordon Lee, the manager. We'd made the decision and then Howard come in and I played in a testimonial game with Andy King and Bob Latsford and all the stars in Yorkshire. I think it was a Halifax, something like that. And I played really well. And Howard said to the coaching staff, are we sure about this lad? Because he was the best player on the pitch. And they went, well, it's not his ability, it's his physique.
Still on about.
So
yeah.
I had to work on that. And my old manager, Johnny King, he was the manager at Tranmere. Done really well there. He helped me. Used to throw medicine balls at me and everything, you know, just to get me strong. And with the getting the strength, I've become very, very quick. And without that pace, I don't think I'd have ever made it at the top. I needed that pace to get away, you know what I mean, from the defenders.
Yeah. Well, some of the stars, the 85-86 season, are at the top of the pitch. You've got you on the wing and then McAvenny and Cotty up front. Yeah. And as a partnership, it blew all the other partnerships in the top flight away at the time, including the likes of like Liverpool, Rush. Mm-hmm. How good were McAvenny and Cotty that season?
They were brilliant. And they worked together in a way where Tony was just the finisher. as we say, inside the box, and he was always there. And it's, you know, you can't, like, I don't think you can coach that. He was just deadly. Frank signed as a midfield player, didn't he? Or to play in the hole. And I said, well, you always like to play in the hole, Frank. You know what I mean? So, but when Sarge got injured, John just went, go on, get up there. So we, you know, and Frank just loved it, didn't he?
And that was in a, like, two up top. Now, two up top. Frank and Dev, Tony.
Yeah, Devonshire was just incredible player.
I love every kind of West Ham player of the 80s says this about Dev. I would say he's the favourite player of West Ham teams from the 80s. Would you agree with that?
Best player I've played with, I'd say that. And I played with some good players over the years, but he was the best.
He's another one who came out of non-league. He was a forklift truck driver on the Friday and a top flight footballer.
Worked for Hoover, didn't he?
Did he?
Yeah. I said he cleaned up there, didn't he?
We're getting the best of all the one line.
He's like, you know, Dev, for £5,000 he cost.
It's unreal, isn't it?
Yeah. It'd be like...
That's probably less than the forklift he was driving at the time. It's the decider. Be there as West Ham United attempt to secure a spot in the last 16 of the UEFA Europa League against SC Freiburg on Thursday, the 14th of December at 8 p.m. in a match that will determine who finishes top of the group. It's all to play for in another huge night under the lights at London Stadium. Tickets start at just £35 for adults and £15 for juniors. Get yours now at eticketing.co.uk/WHUFC or by calling 0333
0330 1966. Wardy, I mean, like, when I have interviews and speak about moving to West Ham, I know it was a few years later. Did you love the club straight away? I know we speak, and I'm fortunate enough to spend a lot of time with Wardy now, like, because we're the ambassador stuff and that. Did you have that real? I say it because I think it was. East London seemed like it was similar to where I grew up, bit working class, bit gritty. Did you have that sort of feeling when you signed?
Straight away, Alvin being a scouser as well, and he was a great captain. And he obviously, we were only young coming down, and Jane was missing a mum, and she was always back up. So I was going to Alvin's a couple of nights a week to have me dinner.
Oh, were you?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, so he's a good man.
And I think at the time, it was a real family club, you know what I mean? Everyone was just, you know, just there to help you in any way. And John's door was always open. I remember saying to him, Jane was a handful. I can't live down here, missing my mum, this, that, and the other. I said, well, what do you want me to do? I said, I've got in the team and playing well, playing really good football. She said, you're going to have to speak to John. And I went, so I had 6 weeks of being at the club, and I went in, knocked on his door. He said, come in, son. So I said, John, I've got a problem. And he goes, what is it? I said, Jane wants us to move back to Liverpool. He went, I'll be at your house tonight at 6 o'clock. I've got the manager coming round now tonight. She went, why has he got, he's coming here to speak to you. 6 o'clock on the dot. John was brilliant at dealing with things other than football. You know what I mean? It's just like, he's the best. Knocks on the door. And as we walk in down the hallway, she's in the living room, and he pops his head round. He said, now, my lady, what's wrong with you? And she starts, he said, you can turn them taps off. He's going nowhere. You put the kettle on. So I was like, putting the kettle on. He sat there, and she was just like, what happened in the end? I got a £200 rise. I'd only got to,
incredible.
He went, right. She went, well, we just moved into this house. It's 80 grand and the mortgage and this, that, and the other. And he went, listen, we'll sort this out. He's had a good start. He said, if I give him another £200 a week? He said, and she just starts smiling. It's another pair of shoes for her, wasn't it?
I mean, that's beyond his times, though. That sort of dealing.
Yeah,
that's, you know what I mean? Like, as a manager, to come.
It's brilliant.
Don't think you'd see it in modern days, but to be able to come in and speak to family like that is unbelievable.
James, what he did, he used to say, right, we were in the hotel before we bought the house, and so I'd go with him to the hotel, pick Jane, and he'd take us all around the estate agents, Loughton, Epping and all that, like, for hours, and, like, drop us back off. I think that sort of manager he was, a bit like Howard, you'd run through a brick wall for John Lyle. I would have done.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? He was just an amazing guy, and I think I think that season, we just gelled together for some reason. You know, they'd only signed me and Frank. And Alvin always says, they sound two players, one from Glasgow and one from Liverpool, do a lot alike, where they were winners. They were very aggressive. They were very, very quick. And they didn't give a hoot about anybody or anything. So, you know, that season couldn't have gone any better. And like when you think Tony and Frank scored 58 between them.
Mad goals, unbelievable.
So 86, we nearly win the league. But a year later, we begin this kind of downward slide that progresses through the rest of the 80s. And I wondered, Wardy, if I gave you a time machine and took you back to the summer of 86 and I'd said you could sit down with John Lyle, what would you tell him? What would you tell him? What could we have done differently to build on the achievements of 86?
Well, it's only to reinforce the squad. And he didn't get any money, really, realistically. He didn't get any money to, you know, we finished third. Like, we had a very small squad anyway. So the team picked itself. You know what I mean? There was no one really to be behind Frank and Tony up front. And players do get complacent, don't they? And I think that the problem that the club had, or what John's problem was, that he never got any money to invest in the squad. It'd be unheard of now, wouldn't it? You know what I mean? They don't think he got any money the season after.
That's unbelievable.
That following season, though, there's a few players emerge from the academy. Kevin Keane, who was on a recent episode of Ironcast, but also Paul Ince and Steve Potts, who had gone to captain the club.
Yeah.
Do you remember seeing those players in training, and did you have an appreciation for how good they were going to be immediately?
Yeah, without a doubt. Especially Ince. Paul had, you know, he was... Paul didn't have a car, so I'd take him if he needed a dentist and all that. So you just knew straight away. He had this arrogance about him, and so when he got into the first team training sessions and that, and he got into the dressing room, I always remember Liam Brady, the legend Liam Brady, come from Italy, and he's up against Liam, and Ince goes into a tackle, doesn't foul him, dead strong, wins the ball. Beats another player and bangs it in the top corner. Unbelievable skill, had everything. And he turned around to Liam and went, "You used to be the top man, but I'm the top man."
Did he?
And I went,
"How old was he then?"
He was what, 18?
Wow.
So, but you know what yourself, James, is like, I'm very respectful, especially of the older players. And then he had to be told, you know, by Alden,
"Settle down,
you can't say that."
How do you contain? Like a player like Paul Ince, like, because that ego is kind of what drove him on, I think.
Well,
to be
it's you don't want to stop him being the player that he was, but it all comes to a head with him because he was getting really lippy and that. And we were playing Luton away, and Alvin was playing centre mid, and he'd give the ball away cheaply. And I always remember Alvin saying this, "Ince, tighten up, don't be giving the ball away easy, too easy." And he's turned around, and the worst words he could have said, "F off. You scouse."
Really?
Right.
I bet Alvin took that well.
I'll tell you what he done. And we're getting beat. So at half time, I'm behind Ince. And then Alvin comes up behind me and just pushing me to one side, turns him round, pulls him up, right, by his throat, up against the wall and butts him. I swear to God, butts him right in the nose, claret everywhere. He just fell to the floor. "Don't ever speak to me like that again." Right. So the security picked him up. He was crying. So he gets ushered into the dressing room, and there's blood coming out of his nose. John Lyle comes in and goes, "What's going on here?" Alvin went, "John, it's all right, I've sorted it. And John never said a word. But he learned the hard way.
Did he play on, didn't he?
Yeah.
Was that half time?
Yeah, half time. He come on, we got beat that day. But it was, to me, that's things, you know, you sometimes in life you've got to do things.
The 80s.
Yeah.
It sounds 80s. Right up my street. I'm not going to lie. It sounds like I would have fitted in nicely, Wardy, in your team.
Well, I think, you know, we learnt a lot from that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Julian Dix joined the club in 88.
Yeah.
What was he? I imagine the two of you got on.
He just kicked everyone in training. So... ruthless. I mean, going over the top and everything. So, and obviously I was up.
Really? He was doing that even to his own teammates?
Yeah, proper bully-like. So we were up in a training session. And so I'm right side and he was left side. So there's always going to be problems, wasn't there? Anyway, he does me and then we end up fighting. So John sends Julian in I'm on the side. He said, I'll see you in my office after training. So it's like the headmaster, wasn't he? So we're outside and I'm just looking at him and he's looking at me. And there's animosity, you know what I mean? Because I couldn't have my own players, you know, trying to injure. And this is what he was like. He was like, I always thought they had a screw loose, you know what I mean? He was naughty. And we spoke about this. So anyway, we get into the John's office. He said, I've got a problem here. He said, two of my best players, someone's leg's going to be broken. And Julian went, as he would, well, it's not going to be mine. And I went,
go at looked it at him like that. And went,
I've had a good think about this. He said, from now on, you're rooming together.
Oh,
did he?
That's
it's genius.
That was, yeah, I've heard
he said, yeah. And he said, and you've got to be on the same side in training.
That's
to protect.
Sensible.
And yeah. In the back of my mind, I wasn't scared of him, but I was thinking, well, it's...
Well, you ain't going to pull out of a tackle. You ain't going to pull
exactly,
out.
Yeah,
it's going to happen, isn't it?
But James, some of the tackles, man, yeah. It was just like, you know what I mean? So...
Was he quite... Sorry to interrupt you. Was he quite quiet, Dixie?
Julian.
The, like when he wasn't training and
yeah,
that?
Yeah, very. Yeah. Honest to God.
Because he came in with Slav, obviously, didn't he, as coach? And
Benny,
I used to know him as a player. And like you say, I knew he was ferocious, to say the least. But I find it like he was quite chilled. I don't know if that came with age. He was very chilled off the pitch.
Yeah, very, you know, humble in loads of ways. You know what I mean? He was like, so I ended up having to room with him. Now, the first couple of, well, I always remember the first one. We didn't stay in the best hotels. So the two single beds there. And I always remember like the little wire, you know, the remote control on. Like, so I get on my bed and he's on his. And he just goes and snaps it off the wall. So he snaps it. So we can't use the remote control now. So I went, that's all right, isn't it? I said, we've got to get up now to, you know, turn the telly over. And he just went with the remote through it. And it went right on the corner, right into my head. And my head just went. Next minute we're fighting and Alvin comes in. It was just a nightmare. He burnt me with an iron.
It sounds absolute carnage.
Oh,
and then you was getting on though. You was like,
we ended up being really, you know what I mean. I've done loads of events with Julian and all that, and it was when we reminisce about, you know, the things that we did. The iron thing, one that was a big problem for me because he's ironing his shirt. I'm in the shower, so I come out, giving it all that like that. I said, leave the iron up there, and as I walked past him, he's got the iron and just gone bang right on my ass. I had a V like that. The skin was on the skin.
Oh, stuck on the
was
iron.
Stuck on the iron. So I'm screaming, gone to the window, like, and I'm going, ah! And he's looking at me like that. So I've gone to get him then, haven't I? Then he's going like this. It hasn't come near it. I'm thinking, I'm going to get a V here.
Home alone.
And I thought, he's going to do me again. Ah, so just back off. But these are the things.
It was a bit of like a... I don't want to say power struggle, but you had two big players. Do you know what I mean? Was it like, sort of, would that have been a part of it?
I think we respected each other because Julian was a very, very good player. And I think when you look at his game, I played against him once and he was marking me I was playing for Everton, he was playing for Liverpool. And I said to him in the tunnel, I said, I'm going to destroy you today. Because it was my derby, you know, it meant a lot to me to play in a derby. And I scored, Cotty scored and we beat Liverpool. We battered them actually, but... I always say to him, it's the only time we ever played against each other in, you know, top level, like. And I said, I'd love to play against you every week. I said, and he says, that was a one-off. That was my debut. I was nervous. But he had a good game, actually. He nearly scored a screamer in the top corner. But, yeah, we ended up having to respect each other. And John's, like you said, is genius, really.
Yeah.
Because I think without rooming together and getting to know each other, and it's iron out all the things that we were, you know, we end up being really good mates.
Well, it sounded like John had to do something because it sounds like you would have killed each other. Oh, if not.
Yeah.
And it worked.
What I was, you see, it was not just me, it was everyone.
Yeah.
You know, going over the top and everyone was.
That's probably why you're so successful. Though. I always try to train how I played. You know, you see, you're certainly probably in your day as well, Woody. There was players who, you'd think, how is he training like that through the week? But then come Saturday, he'd probably be the best player. Yeah. But I think me and Noel, certainly at our time, we tried to get everyone to train, maybe not the tackling that used to go on in Morley's day, but try and train as if you're playing.
Yeah.
And I think that might be a thing at West Ham because the training, I remember tackles and fights in training, even when I was there. But I think it might be a thing at the club that you've got to train flat out every day.
Yeah, because because of my size and all that, fitness was a massive part of my game. My dad said to me, don't let fitness, my sort of thing when I went out was to destroy my opponents. And I always thought, if I destroy, you know, the midfield player or the fullback, get the better of them, and we all do that around the pitch, six of us, you know, got more of a chance of winning the game, haven't you? Dominate your opponents, and that's what all I, you know, looked at. And then if I'm dominating the opponents, help your teammates out as well. And I think it was just a way that I was taught through my dad and that, you know what I mean?
Back on Julian Dix, can you believe he became a senior member of the coaching staff in Ginger's period? Because it seems like the player you played with.
Julian played a lot of football, and he had terrible injuries, and his knees, it's one of the worst knees I've seen, and he hopefully he'll get it done. I know he's gone back to America. But hard as nails, I mean, and what a left foot. It's like a wand.
It must have been such a pleasure to play with him, you know, be in on a match day.
Yeah.
Aside from the training, to have a play like that on your side must have made you feel.
Yeah, listen, Julian didn't have any pace. And for not having the pace that he had, and because he was a left back, and he never got exploited. He read the game so well. He could come inside and play as centre half as well. And his tackling was exceptional. You know what I mean? But I've seen some of them, and it's like, it's ridiculous. You'd just be
exceptional when he won the ball. Maybe not all the time.
Yeah.
So summer of 88, Tony Cotty leaves, and then 89, we get relegated, and John Lyle leaves.
Mm-hmm.
Lou Macari comes in.
His attitude when he comes to the club was just like the West Ham way. What is the West Ham way? Well, we all know, we all want to try and play the game the right way, but he said, I could never get the ball off Parksy. Parksy's got to kick it. Parksy couldn't kick it because he had an arthritic knee. Used to throw it out all the time. I'd come deep, and he'd throw, if it broke down on the left, he'd just throw it out to me like that. Couldn't get that. We all had to go up to the halfway line. So straight away, he was trying to change things his way, you know. And, you know, I would never have left the club only for him coming, because if they'd put Bonzo in charge or someone within the club, I'd have stayed, because I was happy. I was happy at West Ham.
Oh, it's heartbreaking, but interesting. You're a interesting part of West Ham history, and that the way you leave and Trevor Morley and Ian Bishop come the other way, Ian Bishop being a fellow Scouser. So, I mean, those two went on to have a great West Ham career. We've got you to thank for that. You are worth Bishop and Morley.
When Howard rang, I was going to go to just to get out the club because of Macari. John Toshack, the great Liverpool player, he wanted to sign me for Real Sociedad, and it was nearly done, the deal. It was just over Christmas, and I get a phone call, 11 o'clock at night, Peter Reid. Wardy, got someone here to speak to you. Mark, Howard Kendall. And it was like, obviously, what he did in the 80s. He said, I've just took over this Man City. He said, I need a team full of Scousers to keep them up. That's what he said to me.
Really?
I've got me general. So we got Reedy. Reedy said, you're one of the best in the business at this moment in time. He said, and he got like, he had to get all the effort. Because they were 9 points adrift at the bottom. They'd just been beaten 8-0. They were all kids, really. So I said to him, well, you're sending a Scouser that way, meaning Bish. And he went, he can't do what you can do, son. He said, that's why he's going that way.
So, that's why he's off.
Yeah. So, you know, Howard did a great job, kept them up, and stopped the goals going in, put Alan Harper as a sweeper because the back four was leaking terrible. So we're getting draws. And I always say that was one of his best achievements, because you know when you're taking it over the team at Christmas and the 9 points, they're dead and buried, really.
Yeah.
And his sort of, he couldn't gamble in the transfer market. He had to get the lads in that could do the job then, not improve at the end of the season, there and then. And he got, like, the City fans didn't like it, but I always mentioned to him, listen, don't forget them Scousers kept you up. They don't like it.
That goes down well.
No, I've done it on the stage. They have a big stage, don't they? It's like you go out there. So they invite me back, and I said to Reed, he said, be careful what you say out there. He said, because I know what you're like. So they said, how did you tell all the fans, about 5,000 there. It's all done proper. And the guy said to me, can you just tell the fans how it come about? I said, you really want to know? And I said that. I said, Howard Kendall rang me, and he said, he needs a team full of Scousers to keep them up. and they just booed. I just went, I had to go. You know, when you think on your feet, I thought, calm down. Listen, just listen to me. You know, when you won the league the other year, when Aguero scored that, I said, I was jumping up. I said, this club was a stepping stone for me to go back to Everton. I said, and, you know, the manager did a great job. And, you know, you've always got to remember that. I said, whether it was Scousers or whoever, but, you know, brought the Scousers in because they're the lads he trusted.
Interesting little footnote to that move is that your first six games for City, four of them against Millwall. Yeah. What kind of reaction did you get from the Millwall fan?
Well, my debut, he put me in the centre midfield with Reedy because we had a great winger, David White, quick. So, and Reedy could only pass the ball 5 yards. He couldn't get the ball and ping it, Reedy. But he was a great player of what he did. And I would say, just get it and give it to him. And I enjoyed it. But Terry Earlock was trying to, you know, double up on me. And Reedy just, you know, he played for England, Reedy, and he was very, very good at winning the ball and just like one touch, perfect passes. So the player who was receiving that ball could just, you know, put it out to the wing. He was just brilliant to play with.
We're out of time, Wardy. But there is definitely a need for a part two to this interview.
It's a must.
Because I don't feel we've even...
Loads. Part two. Me? I mean, I was just saying, I'm sat here listening, thinking, we could be here all night doing this.
Yeah.
It's unbelievable.
Yeah, and talk about the prison team. And
yeah, I mean...
Got a trophy.
And you've got the best autobiography title of any footballer I'm aware of, from, was it right wing to B wing?
Yeah.
Incredible. Yeah. An incredible story that's still to be told, Wardy.
The B wing, the Bronx.
Oh.
Yeah.
We'll hear all about that very soon, I'm sure. But for now, thank you for joining us, Mike Wardy.
Thanks, Chris.
I mean, what a story.
Ginge.
And like I say, there's still more to hear on that. Ginge?
Brilliant. Like I've just I said much. In the pod, I spent a bit of time here since I've retired and we're both doing the ambassador stuff and it's just a pleasure every time I'm with Wardy and thanks for coming on, mate. You've been brilliant.
Thanks. Yeah, brilliant. And thank you for listening. Until next week, come on, you Irons.
Sports Social Podcast Network.